conversation today. I just wanted to explain a little bit of the context. This is for Territoire Partagé, which is an initiative that Joanna, who's with us today, began last year. And it's a website that hosts articles and podcasts and various documentation about how people are practicing contemporary dance in Quebec and mainly in Montreal. The website is French and English. So today, just please feel free to speak in the language that you prefer. You can switch between them as well. I'm going to ask the questions in English, but just, the conversation can flow between both languages. I've been doing podcasts with individual people, and this is the first discussion that I've led. And because of the quick turnaround, we're not going to go probably as far in depth as we could. I feel like this is an initial conversation because so many of us have just kind of been forced to start teaching online, and that maybe by sharing our practices, my hope is that by sharing our experiences that we can kind of collaborate, and that other people can, who are in the same position, can kind of learn from what we've been doing and what we will be doing for the next little while. Just before we begin, I thought that we could just take a breath together in whatever way you want. You could close your eyes or not. We could just have a little moment. Breathing in and letting go. And imagining that we're in a space together. So I guess we'll start. The first thing I thought we could do is just introduce the context in which we're teaching. So we know each other, but just explaining like where you're teaching or where you were teaching online. And I'll start. I was teaching at Concordia. The last day of my classes is when the shutdown happened. And then the following week, I had to start teaching at the National Theatre School, and I've been teaching a little bit for a Pilates studio as well. So, Isabel, would you like to go next?
Moi, je suis arrivée après Erin. Fait que c'était vraiment dans la semaine où on s'est posé comme Sarah et Marie-Claire, où il a fallu changer les cours pour le mettre vraiment sur une plateforme qui était le Moodle de Concordia, mettre nos classes sur Zoom, ensuite à enregistrer ça sur Yuja. On avait tout un protocole. Mais ça a été fait pendant plein de semaines. Même après, moi, j'ai continué un peu avec mon groupe, un peu comme Marie-Claire, toi, t'as vraiment continué plus longtemps. Puis ça a créé un lien qui était différent, mais fragile. Tu sais, c'est quand même pas un 3D. Mais ça fait du bien de continuer dans le même momentum. Mais à l'école de danse, moi, j'enseignais pour les finissants, mais comme répétitrice. Puis on n'a pas trouvé de formule. On a essayé de trouver jusqu'à la dernière minute pour que les étudiants aient une présentation, un vidéo d'une minute et demie qu'on aurait pu filmer un à un pour qu'il y ait un sentiment d'avoir vraiment terminé, fait une messe. On a fêté par Zoom, comme ça. Ouais.
Sarah, would you like to go?
I'm realizing that my teaching situation is a little bit different in the sense that I'm not actually teaching in any official school capacity. I'm teaching an ongoing stretch and strength class to the community, and that's something that I had done for years, but it's actually, while I was away, Melina Stinson took it over, and it was a wonderful initiative she did during when the crisis started. And it was really about reaching out to her in-laws in France and people in the western part of Canada. And it was a real way to kind of keep some older family members in shape. And this it's been 8 weeks now. She teaches Monday to Friday. I've been kind of tag teaching with her a little bit. And it's something everyone is really in need of. And they've said, some of them have said, I haven't been in as good shape in years. And they're taking an hour class every day. And I've had the chance to be teaching once or twice a week. So right. That's what I've been doing.
Thank you. Susanna, do you want to go?
Hi.
I, similarly to Sarah, my teaching is an initiative that I decided to launch myself, partly because I really needed to do something. I needed to do something that felt like I had something to offer. And that also comes out of the fact that because of the concussion that I was recovering from, I've basically been in a isolated confinement since September. So when this hit was just when I was going to start going back to work. I'd done a little bit of teaching, but then all my work got canceled. So I just needed to do something and to feel like I was offering something. And then also because I'm set, that a decision had to be made about a ongoing annual teaching activity that I do in Seattle usually, which is a teacher training program for open source forums. We had to make the decision pretty quickly to move that whole intensive online. And I just thought, okay, I need to practice doing this because I don't want to go into that teacher training situation and not know how to do this. So I decided to launch a class. And so similarly to Sarah, it was just a big call out that I did. I have a pool of 40 people. I teach once a week. There's a minimum of about 27 people that come every time from all over the world, from Australia, Switzerland, Germany, California, Halifax, New York, and a bunch of other places. So I offer a 2-hour class, and it does also seem to be something that just people need. I'm amazed at how much connection can actually happen in this format. I can say more later, but that's sort of just a basic idea.
Why don't we hop up to Marie-Claire, and then we'll go back to Alana and Sarah.
Hi. Yeah, I was launched in with Isabelle and Sarah teaching your group, which is great because it was a sort of a framework. And I want to say, just for the record, that the expectations about what we were going to do changed pretty much until like halfway through the teaching. Like it was like students didn't have to participate and then they did, and we weren't going to have to grade them, and then we had to give them 10% of the grade. Like it just sort of, it kept changing. But once I started teaching online, and I was only doing pre-recorded classes because I have a toddler, once school stopped, I decided to keep going a little bit, I think, like Susanna, like to have something to do. And also because there is a way for dance to keep us connected, and it's important and political. And I mean, it's funny, before the shutdown, like the Wet'suwet'en protest, like there were all these round dances everywhere, and like people were just going to the West Edmonton Mall and having these massive round dances. And I was just thinking about that going into teaching, and then we got separated. And it's just, yeah, this coming together through dance feels important. That's how I'm continuing to teach online. I put out an ad in Concordia and the RQD, and I have like a mailing list. I don't know who does the classes. People connect with me either via email or text. I have a weekly Zoom meeting where we talk about dance, but there's not a live session.
Thank you. And then we can hop to you, Alana, and then up to Sarah.
So I was scheduled to teach a intersession course at Simon Fraser University in Vancouver. And when the pandemic hit, eventually that got moved online. So right now I'm in the second of 6 weeks teaching this course, which I kind of reimagined an online version of it. I think that's it. Because we're going to go around and talk more specifically about things. No,
yeah. For
yeah.
Sure. So Sarah.
Hi. I was also at Concordia for when the pandemic started. And I was teaching third years, and I was starting with this group. I hadn't seen them or met them this year. So I taught until the end of the term for 3 weeks. Yeah. And that's the only teaching I've been doing.
Okay. Thank you. All right. So let's just get into a little bit more of the meat of the subject. I think we all have something that we normally teach. And I'm curious to know, like, how that's shifted, like if the content of what you're teaching has shifted, and also the sort of two-part question, like what strategies have worked well for you or what have maybe not worked. So
For me, teaching online was very, very interesting because it just allowed me to bring in content from other people. Mm. You know, and so I could refer to influences I share in the classroom, but then I could refer to these people directly and send the students to investigate the content from, for example, Alexander Technique. Yeah, we did Feldenkrais, we did embodied meditations, things like that that I use in my class. So that was for me a good intersection or something that I found was interesting. And then I would alternate these experiences with my own classes. And then we could really go in depth with the with these principles in and connecting them with movement. And we did more of an open score or open type of dancing. I didn't show any exercises, but we would really focus on principles and connecting, for example, with the bone structure and the architecture of the bone and the marrow, and going into more deeper layers of the body that often when I teach in classes, I don't take the time so much to to do that. So it was interesting in that regard. That's for the content and the format. Yeah, I alternated with one day I would teach a class, and then the other day the students would go and investigate and report on their investigation and then come back to the class. And we would really build from one day to the next on their experiences of different practices and how to apply them to our dancing.
Oh, that's great. And do you feel like that engaged them in a different way than you
did? Yeah, yes, it did. And I got a lot of positive feedback, and students wanted to keep it for next year. This type of investigation of in class and outside of class, and also reflecting and being able to read what other dancers' reflection and their experience with the content, with the different practices that were investigated. And I think it's also, it just allowed them to have a bit more their own rhythm, you know, in their investigation, and to take time with like one special aspect. For example, I'm referring to the bones, for example, to do 1 hour specifically on bones, and then the next day to take the time to really move with that. They got deeper insights, I guess. Yeah. So that was positive. Yeah.
Maybe MC, do you want to rebound off of that or add some of your own experience?
So I actually have a question for Sarah, which is that people were writing in a shared... Where were people reading each other's reflections? That's my question.
We were writing on Moodle, and it was a shared document where we could... Actually, the task was to respond for yourself, but you could respond to other responses also.
Nice.
So if you thought something was interesting or you had similar experience or very different, you could respond, and it created some sort of... une archive collective.
Oui, super. Mm-hmm. It changed the content of my class. Again, it was for me, it was really a matter of time, like about being able to teach during Imogen's nap. So I opted for like a 5-minute warm-up that's like interval training or dance, but something to get your heart rate up. And I always say it's to activate sensation and find support in the body, which is true. And then 3 dances that were open. And then we would meet for Zoom for 30 minutes every day at 9:30. And everyone who was not, sometimes people showed up and hadn't done the work, which was really interesting because they just listened to other people talk about their dancing. And people could write if they didn't want to Zoom. So I would have more of one-on-one dialogue than I do when I normally teach in person. I didn't do any set material because I wanted to keep invest, like I'm very much about autonomy and three-dimensional space. So I didn't want people having to look at the screen, but I don't think that's, I don't say that with any judgment. In the Zoom meetings, because we would each go one at a time, like I would call out names and every single person would take the time to speak and was mindful. People naturally took the exact same amount of time. So something that really worked was that, is that people were suddenly responsible in a discussion in a way that I don't find always happens in a, when we're in presence, because certain personalities take over. And then they sent me videos of them doing two of the dances, which was really interesting because I was not privy to their dances for 3 weeks. And then at the end I saw them and I was like, oh my goodness. And there was so much diversity in the proposals. Like people took things in the most wild ways. Like I could not see, like sometimes I was like, I have no idea what you're doing, but it looks like you're really dancing. So that's great. Like I really had to keep reframing. It made me much more aware of my aesthetic preferences that I might have imposed if I had been in person. But then I was also like, it would have been useful to see them earlier on because they all still point their feet every time their feet leave the ground or like flex. There's like weird tension in the outside of the body and not enough tension and tone in the inside. Anyways, I could have, now I'm like thinking about that if I teach next year. Yeah, how to get visual feedback, because there is something, some intelligence that we can have in person, of course. So much of the dynamic is for me about liveness.
Thank you. Why don't we go to Susanna and then Sarah and then Isabel?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot I could say. What one of the things that I have found really interesting is that in fact there's a thing with open source forms that, you know, we've been talking about, like expanding this work further and further, but I don't know, anyway, taking more liberties with seeing how it can evolve. And it's something that I have had trouble doing because there's so much that is just so well crafted within the technique as it exists. And because of the necessity of the situation, I'm having to make adaptations. So I'm finding myself being creative in ways that I just feel a lot more liberty. For one thing, there's a whole portion of the work that comes from hands-on work with a partner. And so I'm having to find different solutions for that, like either that have to do either with self-touch or creating a different activity that gives the same kinesthetic experience that one would have if one were working with a partner. And so I'm finding that amazing and fun and to see how what people do with that. Yeah, and also I mean I've decided, even though there is a studio space that I could be going to teach out of, I decided to just do it in my tiny little office space because I want to be in exactly the same kind of situation as the students. That's weird to call them students, the participants. And so, and also trying to find ways, other things that they can be in relationship to. So I'm dealing a lot more with the environment that they're in. I'm asking them to talk about things in their space so that they're aware of them, and then trying to link that into the activities. Also creating different ways that they can play with being witness at the screen and like moving in and out of like this kind of focus and then being in your own world. So all of that seems, and it's amazing to me how it's working. I think also there's something about, there's so much in that technique that is about eventually also giving people more and more autonomy in how they are constructing their own practice. And there's something about this situation that really underlines that, even to the point of me saying, you know, you can choose if you want to mute or unmute. You can choose if you want to turn your video off. Of course, I'd like to see you, but if you feel like you want to be in your own space or you want to be off of the screen, you can do that. Which are principles that are important to me. And I like the fact that people are taking those kinds of liberties. I guess one of the things that that really struck me And it might be in part also because of my own living situation, because I am I'm one of the people who's sheltering alone. And so I'm experiencing a lot of things about what it's like to be in that kind of isolation, and then experiencing these thinking through that lens about some of the at least some of the people who are there. And because the work is very much about sort of shedding layers and getting to a very vulnerable state, I feel like it's also made me make some really specific choices about how to find, to help create ground for people. So I take a lot more time at the beginning, at the end to check in, and that seems really necessary. I find myself, it's also giving me liberty to bring in some other practices that I feel can fortify the work that's there within the technique itself. Some holes that I've felt for a while are missing, but they seem really glaringly apparent in this circumstance, because I think there is, like, several times people have talked about this, like, loneliness that happens. You have this, like, crazy moment with all these people on the screen, and then you turn the screen and bam, you're like alone in your room again. And so trying to find some ways to mitigate that, and also to think through more specifically, like, okay, what are some things that you could from this actually take and do practically by yourself to keep feeling a sense of connection? So yeah, I don't know that I would say that there are any strategies so far that feel glaringly like they're not working. I think I'm just, I'm enjoying having to roll with it in a way that isn't necessarily so present.
Great.
Okay, so speaking about my course at SFU. So, of course, I was excited to figure out how to do this, because that's the kind of person that I am. So I was jazzed. I was like, we're moving things online. I'm excited. What are the one of the things was that, you know, I was excited because I engage in a modality. I'm studying. I practice modality. I share modality. That's really, you know, kind of founded on a principle of adaptability and a regularity, and kind of dealing with, like, unpredictable, variables. So it's almost like it kind of makes sense to see how to kind of transpose that into a pandemic context or an online teaching context. So what did I do? I mean, practically the things that are happening, there's an LMS. So what is that? Like a learning something system. So like a Moodle, SFU has their LMS is called Canvas. So I built my course in Canvas. I did a lot of writing. I planned out, my course is rolling out over 6 weeks. 3 hours a day was the initial allotment for the class that was to be delivered in person. So I wanted to create something that was going to offer a similar value of time, but somehow also give value to how that value of time might manifest for the student in the context, in their kind of individual context. So practically what that means is I decided I would offer something synchronously and asynchronously. So part of the course is carried out in real time. We meet via Zoom every day for an hour and a half. We practice for about 45 minutes together. This practice is really task driven. So I'm kind of giving them things to do. So this is like taking us, so there's like a movement kind of towards and away from the screen, with, of course, varying lengths of time where we're kind of looking at one another and like working on the same kind of thing together, and then also moments where we kind of go away and we're able to not look at one another. So about 45 minutes, and then about, you know, like kind of the last half hour or whatever, we sit and we talk about what happened. Interestingly enough, this format existed in my in-studio class. So I also delivered class in a similar kind of way, just through a different portal when I was in the studio. So actually that's not so different. The screen is different, but, you know, kind of the nature of what we're doing, the fact that we have a dialogue, the fact that there's like a reflective process, everybody has a notebook and is recording, you know, making notes about the types of things that I'm saying, the types of things that their peers are saying, you know, maybe making notes outside of our class time together, working on tasks, finding kind of giving value to like the individual kind of expression or manifestation of these tasks. All those values are shared between the studio practice and the virtual practice. So alongside that, I just to kind of make up the other hour and a half, I decided that I would create task lists for them, weekly task lists, practice protocols, I call them. And all of those were delivered through the LMS, so the Canvas or the Moodle. And, you know, just created kind of a PDF document week by week. God, I'm getting so specific for what those task lists were. And in each week, I decided that I would, I offered something specific week to each that would ground the practice. Yeah, thinking about how language, you know, we're talking all the time when we teach class. So thinking about how that could be represented, you know, in the written word, using the written word. Anyway, what do I want to say? I want to say that I would try to ground practice in something specific. So last week was our first week, and kind of the thing that I wanted them to really be thinking about was duration, like autonomy. It's like the big question for this type of practice, right? So how can I be facilitating autonomous work? So all these different ways that these different cues can like appear in our exchange, whether it's like we're live or it's something that I've written about or it's something that we're like all dialoguing about, or I think somebody else mentioned, I think it was Sarah Hanley, like the discussion board, like in the Moodle, you know, so then we have this like record of conversation, so that there's all these kind of points of reference for what might be guiding your autonomous practice that felt super important and actually like pretty easy to lay out a system where that would be something that they would have access to. And yeah, and they work on their own time, and then there's a reflective process. So I've set up a Google Drive account so that they could do it in the LMS, but then they could also do it via Google Drive. So a little bit more access to space. And they drop, their reflections, however they've rendered them, written out or pictures. I really wanted to be super open about how I might receive how they're rendering their experience or the things that they're valuing in their experience. That also feels really nice. So it's not limited to a specific kind of language. I guess in terms of things that are like emerging in the moment is that I'm finding that, I mean, did I make the mistake? I don't know. But when I was writing out the instructions for this reflective process, I was like, be as succinct or as exhaustive as you want. And of course, the people who erred on this side of exhaustive, like really went for it, you know? So like, imagine people are writing every day and it's like, you know, like I have 20 pages to read from one student for like a week. It's just incredible. So slowly trying to direct them into process of making some choices about the details that they're noticing that feel valuable to them. And then how they can investigate those things further as they move forward in their work. So that's a process that's a question that's emerged for me in this process. And I'm figuring out how to do it. And mostly we're talking about it. And I think that's about all. I mean, I guess I should say this isn't a straight technique course. The name of the course is actually Choreographic Lab. So I'm there to, like, we're there to kind of co-create something as well as do practice. And for me personally, I mean, it's a relatively new aspect of my, my creative kind of like teaching output or whatever. But I for sure like to blur the lines between practice and whatever it is we're co-creating together. So there's a lot of that going on. But eventually the goal is to be finding a way to create something and then disseminate it virtually, as well as produce a kind of like a written, what I just kind of call like a static artifact, which might be the wrong word. Yeah, like a kind of document to kind of sit alongside whatever our virtual performance is. Mm. Thank you for listening.
That's great. It strikes me that like what you're talking about is you have this arc over time that you're building towards, and some in the context of a university, that's sort of what we're planning. And then there's other people who are responding to people's immediate needs for like a daily practice. And like those things overlap for sure, but it's somewhat different too. I'll give over to Sarah.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I'm so blown away by the level of sophistication of where you guys are teaching at, because it makes me realize, and not to belittle what I'm doing, but just the kind of the daily practice I'm offering is something just even to get people to connect with their feet on the ground and wake up inner sensation. And there's no intellectualization of the practice, you know. There's just to take a step back, I realize I have to confess a real resistance in general to technology for myself. I'm somebody who doesn't even like to video things. I don't really like to look at dance on video. It doesn't interest me. I never feel that I'm getting the experience that I want from dance, or from movement in general. So I would have thought that this was something that wouldn't appeal to me at all. And I keep surprising myself with how you really can share a space and time with people through the screen. And I don't think it has to do with the screen. I think it does have to do with voice. I think it has to do with good guidance and leadership and kind of creating a sense of space. Breathing together is actually possible. And I find that really surprising. The other thing I think is positive is there's a kind of a grand equalization going on with this thing. And there is the thing about autonomy, the aspect that Susanna raised about being able to be anonymous if you want to take yourself out of the space. And that ultimately you can be practicing and nobody, needs to be watching you. And there's a freedom there. And so in the classes that I'm leading, I mean, we're really just waking it up. Yes, we do a bit of cardio. We do some stretching, some core work. I find that I'm really finding different orders to do the stuff in. I haven't found the perfect recipe. I don't think there's just one. I'm switching things up a lot. Not doing it the same way that I used to do it in the studio. I also am doing it in my kitchen because I feel that it's just more fair, because I'm working within kind of the dimensions of what they probably have access to. It's interesting. It's a challenge to offer cardio for up to 12 to 15 minutes, and to keep that cardio rate up. I try to suggest to them that they are their own best teacher. They're their own best monitor of what's good for them, and that could change from day to day. I have a very wide range of people, so, and different age groups. And there's some who are really gung-ho and jockey, and others who are older and have bad knees and stuff. So I have to take that into account. What's really almost quite touching is the extent to which some of them, it feels like, oh, this is their window onto the world. It truly, at least for now. And that's kind of neat that they show up every day. And I feel that I'm helping them along. And I feel so energized after having taught. So that I'm really getting something back, which is very, very, fulfilling at some level.
Thank you. And let's move to Isabel.
Tellement de belles choses qui se sont dites, hein, everything. I think one of the big things for me was when I stepped into that was the fact of it's the space. It's like if the space took like a personage aspect of it, like to be really clear and clean about having a tiny space. So it made me change a lot what I'm choosing, what I'm teaching, and it made me dive in even more, I think, deeply in qualities. So it was really something that qualities and surrounding, like what do we see, what do we play with, what do we, so there's something else that came up, and I was surprised too. I was a little bit like Sarah. At first, I was really almost in panic, in a shock, because I was so sad to lose all that connection with people, that sharing alive, like that sharing in 3D. 3D still miss, I miss it really much. Huh? I'm starting, Erin saw me in the park. I'm trying to at least 2 times a week meeting Lucie Grégoire, and we're doing practice face to face to just be with someone in a space. Yes, it's great, it's challenging, all that online. It's the way we have to connect and keep. And for me too, when that opportunity to teach kept going, I felt I was so I was far more happier in this pandemic change because the sharing was still happening. But how to teach with my first year for me was easier maybe for than Sarah and Marie-Claire because they know me. So I had a material that they know. So for an hour, we were not stopping and really moving together. And sometimes they could still explore in another room. I didn't have to observe them. That was fun too. And then they were coming back. And at the end, we were taking time to, I explained that with the other teacher in Concordia, but each week for me too, I had a specific task to give them. So I know for the first year, they have tendency to move really from the extremities. So I wanted to make them like, had a core that was moving them more. So we kept, we had this drawing lesson. Each one was coming like maybe the day after they show me their drawing they did. And we were moving with that drawing inside the core and then pulling that like away in the architecture of the kitchen. And so we had fun. We had a lot of, but it took more time in a way too, because I had a lot of talking with each student, sometimes alone, one by one. They were asking me. I think it was a time really hard for them to switch. But now I think they appreciate at least that we still have that momentum and that practical, that movement practice that's keep the body and the mind and the soul going, because I think it's really important to keep that, having a routine, having a connection with them. And I didn't have really a journal. That's such a great idea, Sarah. So we could connect all together too, in not just with the movement, but with the thought, what we thinking, and as a artist and thinker, to challenge each other and to feel the co-op maybe even more together with that thinking together. But for sure, it's a big challenge for me. What I really still, I have to, when I see more myself than them, and that's bugging me. I never saw myself so much, even in a meeting. I'm like, man, I hate like always having to see what I'm doing. You're the... Mais c'est ça, tu sais, maybe, yeah, Marie-Claire.
Maybe just you can hide yourself. That's what I do.
I could, but sometimes they want to see. They want to see.
If you hide yourself, you can just hide the view you have of you. But they see you. It's in the top left, no, right corner with the little dots. If you click on it, you say hide self view. Sorry, that's what I do. It makes me so much more comfortable.
I should have talked about that to you before.
I know.
Because that's it. It's and sometimes when I want to see closer to my participant, my artist, whatever, I see like I want to see them more closer. But I feel it's always a challenge to really. By when I have to, they ask me. It's the first year, so sometimes it's just question on alignment or blah blah blah. So how to reach, I have to get more tips on this, because I feel sometimes it's really, I'm not seeing the same way. I'm not seeing the same way, and it's maybe not all, I miss the studio in that way, to really see the 3D of things, but yeah.
Just wanted to touch base again on the collective archive we did of our experiences. And it was interesting in being able to read what they would write in their journal and being able to bounce off that, you know, the next day. Because usually when we talk in the studio, I feel it's a kind of different reflection. It's more spontaneous. And now they could have time and they could craft their responses and I would have access to it, which in studio, I don't necessarily always take the time to reflect or to discuss with students. So I just wanted to,
I was just curious,
to compare what they're feeling versus what you're seeing? Did they say that they were feeling things that you didn't see in them, or vice versa?
I have to say that I was not trying to look at them so much when I was teaching. I mean, I wasn't, yes, I was looking at the images, but I was not trying to analyze or right, wrong, or what, or are they getting into it? It was really the first weeks of the pandemic, and I just felt it was necessary to move so I could have, and just to get fluids and energy in the body going. And that was more my objective than give them feedback on what I would see on the screen.
That makes sense.
But yeah, it gave me insights different than what I did observe. Yes.
I feel like that's a good segue into my last question. And maybe I'll just share a little bit of my experience too, because I always find it's like a drastic contrast when you go from one institution to another. There's a different culture, a different type of student. And it was just like rendered that much more extreme because I went from being in person with people to being pre-recording myself. I can't help but have a little bit of a mourning for what I was teaching at Concordia, because I had just decided with that last process with those students to share all the ways of waking up kinesthetic sensation in relationship. So I was doing a lot of partnering. I was doing a lot of getting them to observe other people's movement patterns and give feedback. We were working with the floor a lot. We were working with momentum. We were really trying to move as big as we could in space. Like, it was just like all of the things that we can't do right now. And that I also wonder, will we be able to do in the future? You know, like how can we approach contact improvisation? How can we even approach floor work? Is there some kind of hygienic protocol? That's all that to say that it was just like there was such a beautiful collectivity that was forming, and they were we were working in proximity, and they were just getting so spatially intelligent and empathetic towards each other. And we did a lot of flocking. That's something I value a lot about our practice of contemporary dance. And I keep thinking when I'm walking down the street, how like the world has to practice the grid right now, you know, like you have to like be aware of where you're moving, and it's all these linear lines. So maybe there is something about spatial awareness that is coming out through this time, but I felt a little bit sad about that. And then I switched into not having any contact with students, and I just had to prepare these like warm-ups, and I knew the students, so I was imagining them, but I didn't get any feedback about what I was doing. So I had to just kind of go with how I was feeling that day. And there were days where I was feeling really like just internal, and I was like, okay, let's just do something to feel strong or to like stretch and open up. And then there was other days where I was just like, let's just have a dance party. And it's like terrifying to imagine hip young 20-year-olds watching you do a little dance party. But I was like, whatever, like just get over yourself and do it. And so my question to you guys is just like, what do you feel like you need right now in terms of a personal practice and technique and creatively? That's, you could just start with one of those. And what do you feel like your students or your clients need? And you've kind of all touched on this already, but I just was interested to hear on that, like kind of human level, what we're feeling. Anyone can go, and I will not impose an order. Sarah.
Yeah, I can go. I feel like when I was teaching at the university, what was really meaningful for me and for the students, that's the feedback I got, is the regularity and the accountability, like showing up at this, you know, for regular meetings with a group of people was really important. And I haven't continued, even for myself, to train in that way. I do it independently. I don't want to be on the screen like Sarah. At this moment, I feel I don't want it. But nonetheless, I think that's something that would be valuable for me now. And it was appreciated in the past by students.
What I need is to say how inspired I am by what everyone's great work and sort of even the variety just amongst this small group of approaches. So something that I need is to be dancing and to be regularly creative, as you say, Sarah. I found that the Concordia students were incredibly generous in terms of sharing their own experiences in a way that I think maybe they were more comfortable because they were in their own spaces. Like there was an intimacy that we touched on that I think was probably supported by the great work you did with them, Erin, before I got there, because I was working with the dancers that you had just recently danced with. And the fact that I've kept these classes going for the community means that I keep touching base with people about dance and not about the pandemic. And so that even though we're filtering the pandemic at every moment, there is this thing that connects us that is a really healthy filter and integrator. And also I have a dance for mourning every week, a mourning dance. And it's usually the moment that I like try not to cry because, you know, like Imogen's napping and I'm in my living room, nobody's there. And I'm like, and now become a tree and feel the wind of your sadness, move your branches. And I'm like, oh God, I'm doing this. But at the same time, at the beginning also Dan Wilde passed away really suddenly. And I was like, oh, Dan Wilde, like we can't get together to mourn Dan Wilde. And this is times, you know, what is it? We've hit the 5,000 in our province. Like, I don't know. My grandmother hasn't left her room in 10 fucking weeks. Like, so I need to be able to deal with the reality, but I need a filter to integrate and process and move with it and take it in these sort of stages and continuing to dance. And of course it's like teaching because I'm leading a class, but it's, I think what a lot of you have said about creating a shared time and space, even if it's asynchronous, is very important that we have a sacred space. And like, as you said, Isabelle, like we're in this small space, but it's, c'est un espace consacré. C'est pas un espace quotidien. C'est comme, non, on l'a consacré. Ça, c'est ce qu'on veut. On va se servir de cet espace-là pour danser. Plutôt que, oh, we're going to make do. You know, we're going to create. But I do miss people like so radically. Like when people are like, oh, now we'll be able to dance online. I'm like, fuck it. Like as soon as I can be in the studio with people, like maybe this will keep going, but not in the same way.
Isabel?
Me, I have my two parents in the RPA. They're 86 and 82. So for the same, they couldn't walk outside their little apartment for 2 months. So I'm starting walking with them like in the park, but they really lost a lot of... Les muscles, les muscles sont plus forts. T'sais. Puis with Ariane Boulet, we having that project too of going and walking with other old people in RPA in the north of the city. And I feel that's it. It's all that drive for me right now. It's like that drive or walking, walking out, walking. And it's inspiring me even in the teaching. It's like, what do I want to do? What is really necessary? Even with the students having that humanity too, and that sharing and that simple, even for many age, like Sarah, you're teaching with different age of people, and that's really touching. It's like it's different tasks, different needs, different, and I feel right now for me, it's why just going in the park in front of Lucy, we have two different body, two different way of moving, but just taking that time in front of each other. Sorry, the dog. and that's it. Walking with my dog, walking a lot. Mais c'est ça. C'est pour moi, c'est très important en ce moment de garder une pratique. C'est for me and to keep myself. I'm saying all the time, my job is to keep me serene. It's a job. It's really a job because it's not a normal world right now, and to be with my two teenagers, to keep them growing. It's like if the house is everywhere with me, see, everywhere in my in my way of thinking. I'm not going out in a studio to think how I will teach. It's in my house, and that's a different brain that's coming, that transformed me. Right.
Joanna has to leave soon, and I imagine most of you do, but I just wanted to leave space if you wanted to add anything, Joanna. Yeah.
You are so inspiring, and thanks for sharing all your teaching and ideas about what's happening right now for you. So, but je vais juste partir dans cinq petites minutes, mais merci d'avoir partagé avec nous vos réflexions.
Merci, Joanna.
Yeah, I guess things that I have been practicing, I mean, I've been doing a lot of on-the-spot work. I feel like I'm really working my legs these days. That feels exciting. One of the things that I brought to the students in the course was this idea of like, how can we work on expansion in like a smaller space? In my studio practice, pre-pandemic, as well as in the pandemic scenario, I think my focus is pretty pointed at this question of what is possible. So yeah, like what, so there's things that I wrote down for myself here. What do you want to practice? Like connecting with what's compelling and then, you know, how to practically set that in motion. What is possible? To me, it's like the same questions. There's almost this feeling that I have where, yeah, and I don't mean to be like contentious to say this, but it's like, yeah, almost feels less possible to me to be distracted in a practice. Like I really need to make space for like some kind of an investigation. Like it feels so important, and to find ways to mobilize whatever it is that feels valuable or that I'm interested in. Yeah, there's like this kind of a special pertinence. It's like I can't ignore that. That I need to be asking myself about that and how I'm going to go about doing it. And certainly I bring that to my class as well. It's like, you know, like the work that we're doing together, it's not just about the tasks. Like, I don't care what they look like. Like, you need to work. How are you going to find a connection to these things? Even if it's not the version that I'm proposing. Like, it's important for us to still be building, like in this process of meaning making together and like developing some kind of capacity to be connecting to that.
Thank you. Who would like to go next?
Yeah, I mean, I also am feeling a very strong need to keep a regular practice that has been evolving over the time, and some of it is outdoors. I was running a lot. I was running up the mountain every second day. And then I decided, anyway, I've started like just kind of like dancing while I run up the mountain. I enjoy that it makes people smile. Like I like there's something about like I'm trying to find as much connection in movement as I can with whoever happens to be around. Or yeah, like I've been feeling the need to expend a lot of energy. And so there are things that I need to do like that I'm more diligent about somehow now than maybe I was before, or biking out to like way parts of the city that I've never visited before. And then yeah, spending time, I'm lucky because we do have this studio and I can go and use it by myself. Sarah and I have also, in keeping a 2-meter distance, we've been going in and doing an authentic movement practice together, and that is saving my life. To actually witness and be witnessed live like that, it's really incredible to me. And finding that I'm able to sink in, it's funny because I find that there's a kind of a mindset that can happen in the generalized thing where I'm like losing track of what day it is, or like forgetting things, and I feel like I'm floating, and then somehow I can like wham, like go into a moment of practice and be almost more focused than I even remember being able to be before, which is kind of incredible. It's like these little portals. And I guess I have been taking advantage of some, I'm getting pretty discriminating, but like Lucy May is running this off script thing. So I love going and like dancing, even if it's for like half an hour, with other people who are dancing at the same time.
I do a continuum class weekly with a teacher of mine in Toronto. And I see that when I'm teaching, I'm seeing people's need to be moving and creative and making use of their space that way. And also I'm seeing the need, and through myself, I'm feeling this need for grounding. And so that is certainly influencing the way that I'm teaching. Yeah.
Sarah?
Yeah, Erin, I respond to what you said initially about this kind of grid-like thing that we're all moving in. And I was thinking about that recently, that it is waking up people's spatial awareness around each other, for sure. I worry that there's, with that, is a kind of a numbing that's happening, that like maybe are we imagining a little protective carapace, you know, around us that would distance ourselves even further from others. And that's a big mourning for me, because when I think about improvising, which is what I love to do, I think exactly the opposite. It's about receiving energy, receiving a sensation and information from the people around me, and being open to that. And I worry about us blocking off to those kind of messages. But yes, this practice that Susanna and I have been doing has been really crucial in helping me stay, well, feeling like I'm creative. And it is surprising how deeply I can drop in to a really crazy place. I think it's a huge release for us to be able to go to pretty wild and crazy places. I'm also taking an improvisation class online. Never thought this would happen, but Rootsapur is actually teaching online. And I was worried about what that would look like. And surprisingly, I mean, we can, through her very amazingly, what is it? Evocative, her voice and her evocative guidance, I can drop into my own sensations. I also have a practice group that I'm part of, and we've been playing around a lot with what the screen looks like, so kind of framing our improvisations visually. But that, again, is a different artistic exercise. I find it interesting to have to kind of work different ways of coming into the body and then out of the body in order to express and communicate. So that movement is interesting. For myself, I don't feel like I'm moving enough. I guess I'm doing some yoga and I'm trying to get outside, but I'm finding it difficult to find a regularity. I think I'm still pissed off I'm not in Germany, and I have to be honest about that. So that's where I'm at.
Did everyone get a chance to speak? I don't want to miss anybody.
I might just say one last thing, which I recently, like, I made a shift in my thinking, and this is something also that I shared in the last class that I taught, this came out of a conversation with somebody, and I can't remember who it was. To think like, I'm not practicing for another moment. I'm practicing for now, and I'm dancing now. And that's come up a lot, say, in terms of the practice that I teach and trying to, there's something about the situation that it's something that I would say anyway, but it seems really valuable to say it now, that especially if one has a different sort of experience or memory of themselves in that practice, to really encourage them to let go of that and to use the practice for what it is offering, what you need now, and actually to help sort of crystallize for ourselves what it is that we need now, and that is the thing that we're doing. So I'm also finding for myself to just shift that it's because it seems so impossible to think of what's coming and like where we're going and what it's going to look like, just to focus on, to use the practice for now, seems to be useful to me.
That's really beautiful. And I think it's meaningful that our practice is so relevant right now. And it's like, it's relevant to a whole wide range of people, not just people in dance. I was just going to add something, and we can wrap up and you can add whatever you need to, but I have to confess that I was exhausted by the grind before this all hit. And there's been something about business as usual stopping, that I feel like there's a deeper part of myself that's woken up that hasn't been awake for a long time. And that I think it's really hard to lose each other and to lose community right now. And like, we're finding ways to rebuild that. But the things I find beautiful is that we can make these connections of our international influences that a bunch of you mentioned. And we can kind of, the world can get smaller in a way, and the people that we love and the things that we love can be right here with us now. And I also just love seeing people's houses and seeing like these intimate kind of quirky spaces. And I feel so often in studios, it's so neutral. And I enjoy seeing like our personalities come out in these ways. It's been so beautiful to hear you talk. It really has done me a world of good. And why don't you all unmute yourselves? And if you want to just add anything, please feel free. And maybe this is a dialogue that we can have again as things progress. So
I want to say thank you for organizing this. And mm-hmm. also just thank you for everybody for sharing your thoughts. It is really, truly inspiring to hear. It doesn't surprise me that it's inspiring, that it's really touching. Mm-hmm. I feel very lucky to be amongst you.
Me too.
Thank you, Erin, for letting me jump in so late too. I'm sorry about that. But
I'm glad.
I'm so happy I was here.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys. Yeah.
Bye, tout le monde. Merci. Bye.
Fun de vous voir.
Oui. Bonne journée.
Bye. Bye.
Enjoy the sun.
You too. Bye.
Bye.